Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Makeshift Managers Podcast. My name is Austin, and I believe that the 2001 Arizona Diamondbacks is the greatest thing to happen in my lifetime.
And I'm Devin, and the court proceedings of Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire are the best thing to happen in mine.
Oh, man, that home run race, that's a story and a half.
Yeah, they won't tell you about the story. That's the race to the courtroom, though.
I mean, as long as you hit bombs, who really cares, right?
That's what I'm saying. Thank you, Bud Selig, for just a joyous childhood and great reality TV.
That man said, ratings are down, put the ball over the wall.
Hey, Mark, get over here. I have something to put in your butt.
Anyways, speaking of... No, I'm ditching that segue. We're just going to jump into fantasy football. We're just going to ditch the segue. And we're going to move right into fantasy football and just talk about some big performers for the week. Let's start with Josh Allen. Josh Allen is back. Hopefully. Josh Allen destroyed the obvious worst passing defense in the league. They completely abandoned the run. They said, first down and goal on the one, throw it. And I think it just goes to show that Seattle's pass defense is somehow worse than the Dallas Cowboys.
I wouldn't even call it Swiss cheese, because at least Swiss cheese has holes instead of a solid surface. It's more like a screen door, but just the frame. There's no actual screen lining in the screen door, so it's basically a window.
You don't even have to open the door to walk in. You just walk through the door.
Yeah, you just walk through. It used to be a sliding glass door, but the Seahawks slammed it really hard. Like, so the Legion of Boom and, like, KJ Wright and then Martellus? Was it Michael or Martellus? It was Michael, right? Yeah, Michael Bennett. He was on the D-line.
Oh, yeah, Bennett.
That whole defense, they had Frank Clark, a prime Bobby Wagner. I'm not saying he's bad, but he's not the best linebacker in football currently. But that the Legion of Boom defense, that was, like, a high quality sliding glass door, and this defense is just a door that got slammed way too hard and all the glass shattered. So now it's just a big window that wind comes through.
Damn, dude, you're just gonna disrespect Sherman like that?
Okay, yeah, I mentioned the Legion of Boom. I didn't name everybody on there. I named Cam Chancellor because he was the first one to come to mind.
That's fair. Richard Sherman just yelling at good old what's her face, Aaron Andrews.
We should get him on. He could yell at me and be like, you don't try me with a sorry-ass podcast. And I'm just like, Richard, jeez.
Jeez, come on, man. Go get burnt by Mecole Hardman or something.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring that up. I'm sorry.
Speaking of burning people, segues are bad today. Dalvin Cook. These segues are so bad today.
I didn't segue. I just said Bud Selig was helping Mark McGwire juice.
It's true.
I could have rephrased it, like put this syringe in your butt. So I apologize to the listeners, but I stand by my statement.
I can tell you who isn't juicy. It's probably Dalvin Cook, though. That man, he's a small dude, but he's a fast boy. he absolutely torched Detroit now, and he is just torching his way through the NFC North.
Yeah, I don't think there's a run defense in the NFC North aside from the Bears that's going to hold Dalvin Cook to less than 200 yards all-purpose the rest of the year, because the Packers' rushing defense, we've known it since last year with the whole SF-NFC championship game. If you have a talented back and you can make holes, it's going to be a long day. And Dalvin Cook has produced two long-ass days for NFL defenses, and I don't think he's going to stop anytime soon unless he, like, pulls a quad or something. But
I mean,
barring injury, he's going to destroy the league the rest of the year.
Dalvin Cook owners rejoice. That man is probably carrying you to a playoff spot right now.
Yeah, unlike CMC, if he was healthy all year, or granted, if he only missed two games, I'd be the number one seed in my league. But CMC said, okay, here's 30 points. I'll see you next year. And I'm like, dear God.
The revenge tour started, didn't win the game, and then the revenge tour was over.
I'm so mad. I have to go back to David Montgomery and DeAndre Swift starting at running back. And David Montgomery hasn't done diddly shit for me damn near all year.
And to be fair, the Bears haven't done anything all year.
That's true, but like at least Allen Robinson can put up points weekly.
But I thought you said Nick Foles wasn't a starting quarterback.
He's not, but Allen Robinson's a good enough receiver to elevate anybody. He made Blake Bortles look like an all-pro quarterback. Like, come on.
Hey,
you can give Allen, you can give Allen Robinson Tua's broken hip, and he'd probably get 100 receiving yards.
Hey, man. Blake Bortles took the Jaguars to an AFC championship.
No. Okay, sure. But, like, that defense was disgusting.
And Jalen Ramsey declaring they're going to win the thing, and then...
They should have.
They gave it up.
If Blake Bortles was half of a quarterback, the Jaguars would have been in the Super Bowl. But Blake Bortles is sadly like a third of a quarterback, and that just doesn't work out.
I don't even know where Blake Bortles is now.
He's the backup for the LA Rams. So if Jared Goff goes down, Bortles gate begins.
Dude, that's the real revenge tour.
Blake Bortles throwing 6 picks. I can't even complain about Blake Bortles. He's no Nathan Peterman, so...
I'm not even going to ask what's wrong with Nathan Peterman. It's just obvious. It's just flat out obvious.
He's Josh Allen, but like blind. Nathan Peterman doesn't throw based upon sight. He throws based upon echolocation. He's part whale.
Man just throws out some sounds and be like, oh, that's a reaction. All right, I'll throw it there.
Like the memes that we saw of Josh Allen over the last 2 years is like, fuck it, John Brown's down there somewhere. He's like, fuck it, I saw somebody with a jersey down there, and just chucks it.
Oh, man, that's too good.
It's it's just bad. It's like, I'm about to end this man's whole career, and it's just Nathan Peterman staring into a mirror.
Does Peterman even have a job?
Yeah, he's a backup for the Raiders last time I saw. He might have gotten cut because Mariota's over there now, but he was the backup in Vegas.
Hey, man, Derek Carr, Marcus Mariota, and Nathan Peterman. Honestly, that's just 3 quarterbacks on the same level.
If you combine Marcus Mariota's, what's the word I'm looking for, mobility, Derek Carr's Christian values, and Nathan Peterman's arm, you have the ideal quarterback. That's all I'm saying.
How did the Raiders lose at that point, honestly? You got Henry Ruggs burning everybody on the back, and you just throw it up every time.
You've got Derek Peteriota leading every game with a prayer, and then just chucking 400 yards each game with like 2 picks, but he also rushes for 50. He would be the ultimate fantasy quarterback, point blank.
Did you just describe Jameis Winston to me?
Nah, yeah, basically. God, 30 for 30, the Jameis Winston story.
There you go, Las Vegas Raiders. If you're listening, sign Jameis Winston. We just found your ideal quarterback.
Speaking of the ideal quarterback, not only do I have Josh Allen in a league, or in 2 leagues I have Josh Allen, but I also have Kyler fucking Murray. And that dude put on a show this week for the tune of like 37 points. And he did lose the game, but in the games that I had him playing, I won. So thank you, Kyler. Your teammates won't, but I will. You're a stud.
I mean, those two go up against each other this week, Josh Allen and Kyler Murray. That's I feel like it's just going to end up being what Buffalo and Seattle was. It's just like, obviously, Russ didn't go off insane. You know, he had 4 turnovers, so that's lose 8 points, but threw for some decent touchdowns. But I feel like this game is just going to be one of the same.
I think Kyler gets like 2 rushing scores this next game, and Josh might get 1 too.
That boy is fast.
Kyler Murray is so deceptively fast. I saw something on Twitter. It was like Kyler Murray runs faster than a toddler that took something they're not supposed to have. The way he runs sometimes, I'm like, man, I don't know how he's beating these dudes. Like in the Niners game, he turned the corner and I was like, what?
Man just does what he wants whenever he wants. Like when he tossed himself the football against Dallas, it's like, all right, dude, just stop it. I get it. You're good.
He is insane. People are telling him to just play baseball. And, like, sure, he might have been good at baseball, but this dude is shaping up to be a great NFL quarterback.
RIP to the Oakland Athletics who used that draft pick on him.
Well, you know, didn't – who drafted John Elway?
Couldn't tell you.
But that's the thing. If you have an NFL quarterback prospect, you probably shouldn't draft him. Look at Russell Wilson and the Rangers.
Hey. He's a Yankee now.
Okay, but didn't you guys draft him?
I think so, but he wasn't a first-round pick. I think he was a much late round
for the Rangers. You're telling me Kyler Murray went in the first round?
I'm almost sure. I will fact-check this right now.
Billy Bean, you're down bad, aren't you? Dude, like, I get it.
We could spend 4 hours talking about William Bean. We really could.
Oh my goodness.
That man says, do I have to pay my guys? All right, get him out of here.
Yeah. But speaking of paying guys, do the Jaguars want to pay anybody? And if they have to pay anybody, what about DJ Chark? He's been a relative non-factor almost all year in the NFL. But I wouldn't say he had a coming out party this week, but 75 yards to the house in his first play.
Who even threw him that ball? What's that dude's name? Lutton?
Luton. Jake Luton. And his name is Jake Luton. I thought it was going to be Mike Glennon. Like, I don't know who. I would believe that David Garrard was starting for the Jacksonville Jaguars this Sunday.
I mean, Glennon just has the advantage, right? When you have like a 20-inch neck, you can just see over everybody.
It's like go gadget neck, and you just see over the entire. That's why Kyler Murray's so good. Half of his throws are a leap of faith because all of his linemen are like 4 inches taller than he is. Same thing with Russ. Drew Brees, he can't do the leap of faith anymore. If he throws it more than 10 yards down the field, it turns into a duck. But DJ Chark had a game. If you started DJ Chark, if you had a lineup, if you had a two-quarterback league and you had DJ Chark, Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, and Dalvin Cook in your lineup, you might have ruined a friendship.
Shout out to my boy Ben, who sat down Matt Ryan and DJ Chark on the same team. Lost him over 90 points.
Funniest part about the whole Matt Ryan thing is I dropped Matt Ryan to pick up Matt Stafford. In a panic. I picked up Matt Ryan because Matthew Stafford's like, haha, I think I might have COVID. And I was like, well, Matt Ryan, you're on the waiver wire. Granted, it's a 6-team league. It's just like me and five of my friends for money to see how batshit this league can get. But Matthew Stafford had a great matchup, I thought. And then Matt Ryan, I wouldn't have won. I was playing against Dalvin Cook. And let me see who he had in that matchup. It wasn't fair. I was projected to win all day. Then Dalvin Cook said, I'm just going to step on your throat real quick. So he had Herbert, Dalvin Cook, Kelsey, James Robinson. I beat him at one receiver spot, not both receiver spots. And then that was it. He throttled me.
Dude, six teams just sounds stacked on stacked. Like, stacked team against stacked team.
I would have won this league outright if Dak Prescott's leg didn't go bendy straw.
Oh, don't bring up bad memories.
I'm just saying, like, if I had Dak, I would be probably undefeated. I also had Saquon. I had Dak and Saquon. If I had a fully healthy team, no one touches me. Point blank.
I mean, yeah, you're pretty much right. But by the way, Kyler Murray drafted 9th overall.
How does a man that's not committed to the game get drafted higher than the best player in the league? Mike Trout went, what, 27?
20.
It was late.
5?
Yeah, it was late, mid to late 20s.
That's, I mean, to be fair, insane. The team that drafted him didn't even want him at first. Like, the Angels had back-to-back picks, and they didn't spend the first pick on Mike Trout.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That aged well for them. It's indicative of their front office.
I mean, did it age well? Like, yeah, you have like one of the greatest players on your team, but
you guys suck.
You guys are really bad. You guys couldn't throw a ball over the plate if your life depended on it, and to be honest, your life kind of does depend on it.
The thing about it is I'll say it like this. The Angels thought they signed the machine. Whenever he arrived in L.A., he was more so like a McFlurry machine that's been down for 2 weeks.
Oh.
Albert Pujols has been a terrible Angel. The first couple of years, sure, he was really good, but he has been on a steady decline, and he is the slowest man in the MLB as of right now. He's a net negative for that team.
Don't make fun of poor Albert Pujols and his bad feet. The man can't help it.
He can't help it, but the Angels are paying him how much money?
Somewhere between a lot and a lot.
And that's the biggest problem. But back to our fantasy football takes. From what I've seen, waiver wire wise, Duke Johnson, if he's available in your league, he's going to be a good pickup because, well,
David Johnson once again said, I don't want to play 16 games.
His brain bounced off the side of his helmet, so he's in concussion protocol. And I don't know what happened to David Montgomery, but I don't know who they're even going to throw out there. If Montgomery can't go, who's going to play? And if McCaffrey can't go, Mike Davis just turned back into like a top 10 play. If somebody dropped him and you have the opportunity to pick up Mike Davis.
I have to, man. That makes me want to check my league now when we're done here. I need. But I know. I know. I put in. I put in one for Duke Johnson because my two running backs are Antonio Gibson and Wayne Gallman. So I'm just straight up not having a good time right now.
Oh yeah.
Somehow they both fell in the end zone, and then Josh Allen said, "You know what, son? We're gonna break this losing streak for you." So I, for the first time in like 4 weeks, I went 2-0.
Wow. I went 3-3. I should have went 4-2.
Patriots defense, chasing. We're looking at you.
It's fine. It's my own fault for starting Justin Jackson when I could have started Mike Williams.
Hmm.
But it is what it is. The same shit's happening before. I had Kyler Murray on my bench and I had Jacoby Brissett against a terrible defense, and he like hyperextended his knee the third play of the game, and I lost by like 10.
Hmm.
Because Jacoby Brissett just couldn't stay healthy.
The poor boy. The poor boy never stood a chance.
Yeah. But speaking of not standing a chance, anyone who went against our pick'ems from last week, they didn't stand a chance because we turned out pretty well.
You went 11-3, and I went 10-4. So you won two out of the three ones we went against each other.
I'll take a lead. We'll see how it ages.
Honestly, we split on New York and Washington. You won that one. We split on Indy and Baltimore. Looking back, I don't know why I picked Indy. I don't know. I don't know who told past Austin that was okay, but I don't know. And then we split on LA and Las Vegas because you wanted to believe.
Yeah, I really shouldn't pick. I really shouldn't.
I mean, what's that picture I sent the other day? The Chargers have six losses this season, and their combined differential from those six losses is 24 points.
Yeah, it hurts. We should have won. We realistically should have beat the Raiders. I know in my heart we can win that game.
I mean, but, you know, you could be 8-0 right now.
I don't. Nah, maybe. I think the Chiefs kind of played down to us. We should have beat the Saints. We could have beaten every team we've gone against, technically speaking. Yeah. And it's really weird because, well, we've won two games so far, thankfully. But Tyrod Taylor has the best winning percentage of a Chargers quarterback this season.
You really don't want to give up on Tyrod Taylor, do you?
Oh, I don't want to even get started on Tyrod Taylor. He shouldn't have started the season. Young quarterback, just throw him out there. He's proven himself. He's probably going to be the quarterback for the next 10 years if we can keep him signed. But, so we did really well on last week's picks. And so let's look at any storylines from the games that were of last week. So starting off, we had the Thursday night game between San Francisco and Green Bay.
An absolute beatdown. As anticipated. I think San Francisco just really can't compete anymore. I'm not gonna sit here and tell you they're a bad team. Like it just happens. You lost Kittle, you lost Garoppolo, you lost Bosa, you lost this dude, that dude, the other dude. You lost. I'm waiting for Kyle Shanahan to roll his ankle at this point.
Yeah, no. And whenever you have Devontae Adams lining up against your dead secondary, it's not gonna end well for anyone. But Aaron Rodgers is performing a masterclass at the quarterback position this year. So anytime there's a hurt defense going against him, he's going to air it out. He's going to score touchdowns, and it's just going to be that. And then our second pick'em of last week was Washington and New York. What this game taught me is someone is going to win the NFC East, and it will not be either of these teams.
Yeah, especially now with well, I'm not even going to say that because of Kyle Allen being out. They weren't going to win the division with Kyle Allen in. I think Smith threw for like 300 yards, but he also threw three picks and one of them to end the game. I mean, it's great to see Alex Smith back. Like, good for him, but he's a shell of what he used to be, throwing the ball to the other team.
It's hard to game manage a team that can't manage themselves. I'm looking at you, Dan Snyder. So I don't blame Alex Smith for any of the issues with the Washington football team. And yep. I just bet on the fact that Kyle Allen was going to make more mistakes than Daniel Jones. And partially wrong because it wasn't a mistake for him to dislocate his ankle. But shit happens.
That man's ankle pointed the other direction. Said, yeah, I'm going to go this way.
I saw it and I was like, damn. It's a sick-ass dance move, Kyle.
I wonder who's even backing up Alex Smith.
Like Dwayne Haskins.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Dwayne Haskins.
Does Ron Rivera just hate Alex Smith? Is that why he's putting him out there before Dwayne Haskins? Because
you questioning Riverboat Ron?
Maybe. He was liable to be questioned all of last year. He started Kyle Allen for over half a football season.
I mean, that, wasn't Cam hurt during that most of the time? Or was that at one point?
He was hurt most of the time. But I'm just saying, like, Kyle Allen, if you ever hear this, I'm sorry about your ankle. But from what I've seen out of your NFL career, you'd be better off opening a bakery. You'd make a lot of money off of your turnovers.
Damn. Just it is what CMC it is. At quarterback.
I would. Tennessee and Chicago. Anyone that bets on the Bears, they're either sad or from Chicago. It's just Tennessee's secondary sucks. They're bad. They just got Desmond King, so they're better now. Fuck you, Dean Spanos. But Tennessee's offense is good, and Derrick Henry didn't have to do much, which is scary, because if Ryan Tannehill's beating teams, that means if Ryan Tannehill's cooking, that means Derrick Henry's that much more dangerous.
I think Henry only went like 23 for 68, something like that.
No scores. If you played Derrick Henry this week, we're sorry, but whoever faced him, kudos to you.
I'll tell you one thing, though, about Derrick Henry. That man's pushing himself to be, like, probably the top three backs in the league. Like, Saquon hurt himself too much to be in that conversation now.
I don't even think Saquon's in the top five currently.
Zeke is, you know, bias tells me I want to say he's having a down year, but also I need to see what happens next season when everyone's healthy.
I genuinely think Zeke will be fine. The way I look at the running back class right now in terms of the master class in the NFL, as Christian McCaffrey put it yesterday, I'm the best back in the league. Wait for me to be healthy and stop talking. Because he played one game, was arguably RB1 for the week besides Dalvin Cook, and McCaffrey does it week in and week out whenever he's healthy. He hasn't put up under like 24 points on the season. Granted, it's been three games. But currently speaking, if I were to rank the running backs going into next year, it's McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, Cook and Kamara, in any order, those two. And then you have Zeke.
Yeah. I think if Cook stays healthy the rest of the year, he's looking really good. I think he only missed like that.
He missed two games so far.
That half game with Madison taking over, and then next game Madison came in and just didn't really do a whole lot. Yeah. Where everyone and their mom picked up Alexander Madison on their fantasy team, be like, oh man, he did it last year, he's gonna do it again. And then Dalvin Cook was just like, okay, timeout.
Yeah, what we learned from the Minnesota-Detroit game, I feel like, is just if you give Dalvin Cook the ball enough times, it doesn't matter what Kirk Cousins does or doesn't do. And with the Lions, with Galladay out, that offense is just hurt.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what Minnesota was thinking, giving Kirk Cousins that much money. I can tell you one thing, that he does indeed like that. But other than that, Kirk, I mean, you beat the Saints last year, but, I mean, who did they even lose to? Who did Minnesota lose to last year? Can't even remember anymore.
Oh, Minnesota, they beat the Saints, and they ended up losing in the playoffs to,
Seattle?
The Niners.
Oh, the Niners.
Yeah, Seattle lost to Green Bay. And
that's right, and then the NFC Championship game was a joke.
What could have been one of the biggest surprises in last week was KC and Carolina. With Carolina losing by 2 points, Teddy Two Gloves said, not today. But Patrick Mahomes said, not today. Capitals and italicized. And you can't blame the Panthers for losing this game. I think everybody expected the Chiefs to blow them out almost. Like, at least a touchdown.
Dude, Matt Rhule was pulling out all the stops. Like, I think their first touchdown was on a 4th-and-3. He pulled off at least one fake punt that I watched. That man was like, I'm going to beat this team. And you talked about the CMC revenge tour. Was it last week? You said it wasn't going to be enough, and it was close. It almost was enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Matt Rhule is doing a bang up job with the Panthers, and they seem like a dark horse candidate if the Saints or the Bucks somehow slide. I'm not saying they're out of contention for that division, but they could be a dark horse. Not saying they'll make it, but it's plausible. And just Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in football currently. Like, Russ can cook, but I think with the weapons around Mahomes and the mistakes he does not make, it's a hard team to beat.
Yeah, Mahomes doesn't make a lot of mistakes at all.
He's thrown one pick, one interception all year. Behind him is Rodgers with two. So if they keep up these paces, we'll have a total of two picks for Mahomes with like 40-plus touchdowns, and Rodgers should have like 44 touchdowns with four picks.
All 44 touchdowns being to Devontae Adams.
Give or take, yeah.
I mean, and then that man. When you don't draft a wide receiver to complement Devontae Adams, everything's just going to go to Devontae Adams.
Valdez Scantling had a really good game, though, so he's looking good. I wouldn't pick him up in fantasy. If a Packers wide receiver does great besides Devontae Adams for 1 week, just believe that Tonyan's going to get those targets next week, or Alan Lazard's going to get those targets next week. It's never the same secondary guy in the Packers offense.
Yeah, easily.
And then we've got a matchup of Jacksonville and Houston. There's no winners in this matchup. You can't pick the right team. This is just a flip of a coin. I thought Deshaun Watson is way better than Jake Luton, so hopefully they don't shoot themselves in the foot. And Deshaun Watson proved me right.
I thought it'd be a good idea to sit Will Fuller again. I think I'm sleeping on Will Fuller. I think I need to start Will Fuller this week.
I think in a flex consideration, Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks are startable in basically every league, especially PPR, because Brandon Cooks has put together 3 or 4 straight weeks of 12-plus points, and no one's talking about it.
Yeah, Will Fuller finished, I'm going to take a shot in the dark, I think 6 for 100 and a touchdown. Like, Fuller's finding the end zone a lot.
Will Fuller in that offense should be a wide receiver one for the foreseeable future, unless the Texans were to take a top prospect at receiver in the draft this year. But Will Fuller is a easy wide receiver two in any fantasy lineup. He's boom bust some weeks, but he's the top target in that offense.
Even then, Houston doesn't have their first round pick. They give it to Miami.
Love that for them. Yikes. And then we're looking at the next matchup was Indian Baltimore. I picked Baltimore because everyone's super hyped about the Colts defense. More power to them. But don't forget the Baltimore Ravens defense. They're body different. You've got Calais Campbell, Everson Griffin. No. Yannick Ngakoue, not Everson Griffin. He's on the Vikings. But you've got Yannick Ngakoue, Calais Campbell, Patrick Queen, Marlon Humphrey, and Marcus Peters, just to name a few. And you have just those names to name a few. But that defense is suffocating. And if you don't let Lamar turn the ball over, you're not going to beat the Ravens.
Yeah. They're
going to burn up the clock, own possession.
It was me. Me was hyped on Indianapolis defense. I fell for it. I fell for Phillip Rivers putting up more than 10 points. The short arm man himself. Why'd I do it? Why do I do this to myself? Who raised me?
I don't know. Who did the Colts play the previous week? The Lions? Yep.
Yeah, they blew them out 41-21.
Yeah, that's because Matthew Stafford and the Lions made mistakes, and the Lions defense.
That's the game Galladay passed away.
Mm-hmm. And the thing with the Lions defense is it's not the Ravens defense. Whenever you put Phillip Rivers against a quality defense, I saw it all last year. He kind of just pisses the game away.
Oh, just last year you saw it?
For the most part. In 2018, we were, I believe, 12-4. Mm. And we were the 5th seed in the playoffs because of how the seeding works. We were the 2nd best team in the AFC, had to go cross country to play the Patriots, but that's not important. Bullshit. Then we're looking at Buffalo, Seattle. If there's a good offense going against the Seahawks, I think I have to go against the Seahawks from now on. Unless Russ is going to throw for 500 yards and 5 touchdowns with minimal mistakes. That defense is so bad.
Yeah, and Buffalo's defense showed up really well too. They they got to Russ. They picked him off. And Sean McDermott. Yeah, that's their head coach. I don't know why I couldn't think of his name for a second. Just said, why run the ball when I can just throw it? And they just threw all over Seattle and made them look dumb. They made Seattle look dumb.
Yeah, it wasn't a good look for the Seahawks, but that's just Because I honestly should have picked the Bills off rip after what Dak Prescott and the Cowboys did to that defense. Because the Cowboys offense without Dak Prescott sucks. And that's, I think that's more of a compliment to Dak Prescott. But Josh Allen is a Dak Prescott-esque quarterback. I think he has a stronger arm and he's a little bit more mobile, but it's the same kind of combination. The Bills have a three receiver. They have a three-headed corpse at receiver. They don't have a Zeke, but they have solid running backs. And so looking at the matchup between Atlanta and Denver, this is a coin flip for me because anytime Atlanta gets a lead in a game, they seem to blow it. I know about these things because I'm a Chargers fan, and anytime we have a lead, we seem to blow it. And the other team in this matchup is Denver, and the only thing that's good about Denver's offense is Jerry Jeudy at this point. Noah Fant can't stay healthy. Melvin Gordon can't stay off the goop. And Philip Lindsay just isn't getting the shine that he deserves. And so in this matchup, I picked Atlanta just because I think Matt Ryan's tired of losing, and Julio Jones, if he keeps losing, he's going to just cut himself off the roster.
Yeah, I picked Atlanta too. I almost picked Denver for a second because I thought the defense was decent, but once we talked about in Atlanta, Atlanta's looking a little better. I don't know if they're going to push for the division. I think they could finish like 8-8 maybe 7-9, but have a reasonable record, but they played well enough to beat, you know, kind of a lowly team in Denver. Denver's trying to get better, but I just don't think they're there yet.
Yeah, and then after that game, we're looking towards my Los Angeles Chargers against the Las Vegas Raiders, and I'm not going to say I was wrong on this pick. I thought the Chargers could beat the Raiders. They very well can beat the Raiders, but the thing is, what I failed to take into consideration is that the only team the Chargers can beat at this point is ourselves. And so until they prove me wrong, I probably can't pick them again.
I mean, you almost had that walk-off touchdown, but I mean, at first, Raiders fans' hearts broke. They were shattered. And then after review, the best two words, it was not a catch. Couldn't do what Drew Lock did to you. I'm a Cowboys fan, and you know my team is just terrible, but I can't imagine just wanting to, I don't know, it's just like, man, you think you're gonna win a game and then you look up and you're 2-6, 2-7, or whatever it is.
Yeah, we are the best bad team in the league by a long shot, and the only silver lining to this season is, honestly, I don't really want us to win many more games as a Charger fan, because if we can get another piece through the draft this year, a high-end talent, we will continue to be one of the better teams in the league. We just got to put it together and actually close games.
Yeah,
because our roster construction, we are a top 15 team in the league, point blank. If everyone's healthy, the Chargers could be a playoff team. We proved it 2 years ago. We had really good health. But until we can maintain health, it's just going to be the same stuff every single year, point blank.
It's kind of funny because you're one of those like 2-6 teams where whenever we get to picking for this coming week, you almost still want to pick the Chargers because it's like they're playing close games. Like they're not getting blown out. They're not looking bad. It's just like either the offense is good or the defense is good. You can't have both.
Yeah. And then that brings us to Austin's favorite matchup from this week, Dallas and Pittsburgh.
Oh, my dude. My expectations were in the dirt. Like, we talked about, like, mercy rule, Ben Roethlisberger rushing for 100, and then Roethlisberger's knee almost fell out of place. Oh. It's first of all, I never heard of Garrett Gilbert until Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Played well against the Pittsburgh defense. And the whole game I'm watching, man, I'm like, is this going to happen? There's no way it happens. It's going to happen. And then there was a couple points where the refs were like, hang on, we picked the Steelers to win this game. There was a couple of, I'm not going to say the refs cost us the game because let's face it. The Cowboys are not going to win the NFC East. The Cowboys aren't going to win anything. We might as well just take these L's and like move on with our life and get a better piece on defense. But it's like, I would have been more mad if we were a better team. Like if we're like a 5-2 team, a 4-3 team going into that game, and like we lose that game because the refs were a little eh, then I would be more mad. But we were 2-6. We're god awful. It and our season just went the way it was supposed to. And the Steelers played down to their competition like they always do for some reason. Couldn't tell you why. Ben didn't look that good until about the second half. Their defense looked okay. They didn't really get to Gilbert a whole lot. At least they didn't sack him a whole lot as much as I remember. They had that CD Lamb fumble. That was probably the biggest play of the game where we had a big push and then CD fumbled it. Luckily, it only turned into 3 points because they had to bring in Mason Rudolph, and Mason Rudolph is not good.
Is he still in concussion protocol?
I think he's always going to be in concussion protocol.
Yeah, that matchup was just tough. I remember you were messaging me like, is it going to happen? And I can't break the news to you because it's like, I thought, yeah, they could because the Steelers are bound to lose a game at some point, but I'm glad it didn't happen because that's another green in the pick'em column.
Yeah. And
it's just, you have to, if you're a bad team, you have to outplay a good team for 4 quarters. And the likelihood of that happening with a team like even the Jets last night. But that'll bring us, we'll talk about that one at the very end. The next game was Arizona and Miami. Arizona really let this one go. Miami's defense is playing out of their minds. They're playing extremely well, but this is a game Arizona has to win, especially with Seattle falling to Buffalo. Because they could have drawn a tie with Seattle for the lead in the NFC West with the tiebreaker currently.
I think Tua played really well too, because they were without Gaskin and Burita, so they're just throwing out, you know, the Walmart bagger to run the ball for them. I wanna look at Tua's stats. I don't wanna be wrong about him, but I'm pretty sure he had a decent game. You know, Miami wins 34, so Tua goes 20 for 28, 248 and 2 TDs, no picks. So that defense got a scoop and score. Forgot about that. Jason Sanders, you can count on that man to hit anything from anywhere. That man could probably kick it from the end zone to the other end zone.
He's a top. He's basically like a low floor flex each week.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. Like I chased his points one time and didn't get anything out of it. And I'm sorry, Justin Tucker, for forsaking you. Our friend Jordan Howard is back. Our friend Jordan Howard got a 2-yard touchdown.
Yeah, I didn't call on the podcast, but I was sitting there and I'm like, it's going to be a Jordan Howard week. I already know.
Oh,
10 carries, 5 yards, 3 touchdowns.
10 carries. 10 carries for 19 yards. He got 1.9 average.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a touchdown. Jordan Howard doing what he does best, scoring from an inch away.
Oh, yeah. Ruining young running backs across the league.
I mean, for a while, they were healthy scratching them, but then they had to scratch the rest of their running backs.
I think my favorite call from this week is the next matchup with New Orleans and Tampa Bay.
I can't believe I spent 3 hours watching that game.
The thing is, after I watched the first matchup between New Orleans and Tampa Bay, I thought to myself, I don't think the Bucs can beat the Saints. I just didn't think they could. Drew Brees will not make the mistakes that help that opportunistic Tampa Bay defense do what it does. And with Michael Thomas being back, Alvin Kamara operating on full cylinders, Jared Cook being a good tight end, and Tom Brady playing with spare parts. They're not spare parts. They're all like, all of his receivers could be all pro players, but yeah. Tom Brady doesn't have the rapport with said players. So I was talking to my dad week one. I had a trade where I could get trade Tom Brady and Leonard Fournette to get Miles Sanders and Drew Brees. And I was caught up on the whole Drew Brees factor. And my dad told me, he's like, I would rather have Drew Brees as a constant in that offense over the last 6 to 7 years, as opposed to Tom Brady playing with all new dudes. And that's what we saw on Sunday night. An offense that has all the talent in the world just couldn't gel. Whereas a lesser talented offense, quote unquote, that is a unit, was able to just get down the field and score and score and score and score again.
Yeah. Tampa Bay looked god awful. Shout out to the guy on Twitter who asked us if he should play Godwin or Crowder for 25 points. At the time, Godwin was the right pick, and then Crowder. I don't think Crowder put up 20. I think he got a touchdown catch in like 40 yards. So I don't think either of them would have gotten it there for him. But man, if Bucks made me look real dumb.
Yeah, if you need someone to score it, at that point, I would have recommended Jason Sanders over both of them to get you 25 points in a week.
I can't realistically advise you to start a Jets player. I can't do it.
His name is Joe Flacco.
Oh my god. Yeah. No, I'm not starting Joe Flacco either. I'm not starting Joe Flacco in a 24 team league.
You're not starting the Michael Pirine?
No. I'm not starting Pirine, I'm not starting Gore, I'm not starting Perryman, I'm not starting Crowder.
Braxton Berrios?
No.
If you would have asked us about Breshad Perryman, I still would have said no. But he put up 27, I guess, last night.
I mean, the wide receiver core is so huge in fantasy and in the NFL in general. I'm never going to tell you to start a Jets player. It's not going to happen.
There's going to be a better option every single week, every single time.
There has to be.
And that leads us to the New York Jets versus the New England Patriots.
What did I watch last night? What was that?
I thought you were having a seizure at certain points. You were texting me. I think I jinxed the Jets, to be fair, which I'm happy happened because it was another green check in my column. And I didn't want to be with someone that called it on a podcast that the Patriots are going to beat the Jets and the Jets are going to beat the Patriots, because I couldn't live with it.
Because we were
close to calling it. We were like, this could happen, but you cannot bet on the Jets.
Right. It's one of those things, like, I want to pick the Jets, but history has told me, do not pick the Jets. They are bad, and they will find a way to lose this game. Because it's not even that, like, Cam looked bad. I don't think Cam threw a pick. I don't think Cam fumbled the ball. I think they're running. They did a turnover, and I think they lost the ball once, but I can't remember. But Josh McDaniels just wanted to run the ball. Not even with Cam. Just wanted to run the ball with Burkhead, White, whoever else is in that committee of merry men.
Mm-hmm.
Just Josh McDaniels was like, we're going to run the ball and we're going to like it. And somehow it worked. Barely. It doesn't show anything about New England. New England's still not very good. That defense looked pretty bad. The Jets are the Jets. It's just two bad teams mm-hmm. looking at each other funny until somebody falls over. It is what it is. The Bills are most likely going to take that AFC East title unless, you know, they fall apart in Miami. Like, Miami's behind them. Miami's a little mm-hmm. scary, but I think the Bills just kind of walk away with this title at this point.
I hear you on that. And so that concludes our portion for last week's NFL slate, and now we're looking towards the pick'ems for this week. And so I've got them in front of me right here. So we're starting out with Indianapolis and Tennessee, at Tennessee.
I can't pick against Derrick Henry. I get, like, Tennessee's pass defense isn't outstanding and Rivers has a chance, but after seeing what Tennessee, I mean, they looked better last week. So I think I'll go with Tennessee.
Second matchup is going to be Philadelphia and New York playing at New York. I'm still taking Philadelphia. They're getting healthy now. Jalen Reagor's back. Miles Sanders should be back. Goddard's going to be back. Carson Wentz is healthy, to my knowledge. And that Giants defense isn't good. The Washington football team put up a solid 20 plus on them last week. So the Eagles are more talented than the Giants. If the Eagles play down to the Giants level, I could see them losing, but Daniel Jones makes too many mistakes, and that Eagles offense is talented enough to squeak out the win.
Wait, so who's your Thursday night football pick?
I'm going Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
It's an AFC South matchup. Derrick Henry salivates at AFC South matchups. It's in prime time. It's a nighttime game, and it's at home. Indianapolis will have to pick off Ryan Tannehill 2 to 3 times to win this game.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because Jordan Wilkins and Jonathan Taylor, that combination isn't really moving the ball that much. Phillip Rivers has a noodle arm. T.Y. Hilton isn't that dude anymore. It's just their defense is stacked, but it's that offense. Can they keep up with the Tennessee team that's able to put up points?
Yeah. Go ahead and give me Philly against the Giants, too. I think Philly is the... I don't even want to say the better team. They're a team.
Yeah.
They are a real National Football League team. They do reside in Philadelphia. They are the Eagles. They do play football, which is more said about the rest of the NFC East.
Oh yeah. Then we've got the Jacksonville Jaguars playing in Green Bay against the Packers. If you pick Jacksonville, I don't know what you're smoking. I'd like to take the chance to see what you're smoking. I've got Green Bay by a lot.
Yeah, I think that's just an easy pick. If you're picking Jacksonville, I'll send you $5 if they win.
Exactly. Then we've got Washington and Detroit. In Detroit, give me the Lions. The Washington football team are on their third overall quarterback this year. And the Lions defense isn't that good, but I don't think it's bad enough for the Washington football team to come into Detroit and beat them. If it is, then Detroit needs to evaluate.
Yeah, I think it's even without Golladay, I think Detroit is fine just to walk all over Washington. I don't think it's going to be very close.
And then we have the Houston Texans playing the Cleveland Browns at home. I think the Browns win this game by 10 points. I think Nick Chubb comes back. I think Baker Mayfield is refreshed off of a bye week. I think Jarvis Landry has a decent game. I think the tight ends pitch in. I think their defense does enough against the Houston offense to win the game. And I think it's going to be colder weather.
Cleveland's coming off their bye week too. So they're probably
Deshaun Watson's the better quarterback, but I think Cleveland has the edge.
Man, I'm kind of torn on this one. Like, it's not even the fact that, like, oh, Houston beat Jacksonville. It's just like, I know Houston can be very explosive.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Cleveland can be very not explosive. You know, Baker Mayfield's busy shooting all them commercials. Man, I'm going to take the upset. I'll pick Houston. I think Houston can pull it out. I just don't believe in Cleveland. I'm not
even with Nick Chubb back from IR.
Oh, man, see, now you gotta say stuff like that
because they're gonna have Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt doing their things. Those are checkdowns to bait from Baker to Kareem Hunt. Those are 5 yards per rush for Nick Chubb. I think if Cleveland can control the clock and Baker can stop throwing picks, they win the game by at least 7. Because we also have to take into factor the Browns' defense isn't a world beater, but Myles Garrett is on a tear this year.
Yeah. Ugh. You can say I told you so next week. I'll write it down. You can next week when Cleveland blows out Houston, just be like, I told you so.
Yeah, the way pick'ems go, it's a game of chance half the time. Tampa Bay and Carolina in Carolina. If Christian McCaffrey is out, I'm penciling in Tampa Bay. Wholeheartedly, their secondary isn't good enough to compete with weapons that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have. It's just the way it is. Like, the Saints are equipped to do that. They have Marshawn Lattimore, which is basically Revis Island whenever it comes to Mike Evans. But I just think Brady has a bounce back week. Fournette and Jones do their thing. Mike Evans probably has a better week. Godwin probably does more. Antonio Brown might have a breakout game. There's too many weapons for the Panthers to realistically shut down. Unless Teddy Two Gloves comes out and just chucks the rock, it should be the Buccaneers by at least 3.
Yeah. Yeah, it should probably easily be the Bucs. Especially if McCaffrey's out. AB gets more snaps, too. Especially if McCaffrey's out. You lose that explosive player. So, But if McCaffrey's in, let's say McCaffrey's in, does that change your pick? Or do you still think Tampa pulls it out?
I still think Tampa pulls it out. I think it's closer. But if McCaffrey's out, I don't see an avenue for them to win. Unless Curtis Samuel gets 3 touchdowns. And even then, there's still not a guarantee to win. Like that Carolina-Chicago game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll go with Tampa Bay. And if CFC plays, it's closer. But I don't think it'll
It is an NFC South matchup, so it's divisional. But I just think Tampa Bay is too talented. And that defense is going to have a bounce-back week as well. They're really talented.
Yeah, they need that bounce-back week.
Next matchup, we have the Los Angeles Chargers playing in Miami. This is going to be – I'm taking the page out of Bill Simmons' handbook. Whenever the Bills were playing the Patriots, he bet on the Bills. And if the Patriots won, it's a win-win. So I'm going to go Miami this week in Miami. Their defense is hot. Herbert is the hottest rookie this year. But I just think that defense is opportunistic. And if Tua doesn't make mistakes, it's hard for the Chargers to beat this Miami team. Especially if Breida's back. Or Gaskin. But Gaskin won't be back. He's in the IR.
Yeah, I think Miami definitely is going to beat this one out. Tua looks good enough to lead them down and get them some points. You know, the defense is scoring themselves. And... I don't know.
The Chargers' defense has been asinine, and Joey Bosa is out. I don't see enough on the defensive areas of our team to bet on them currently. Bolt up, but if Miami wins, I get the pick. If the Chargers win, I feel better about myself, but not entirely. We could use a better draft pick.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely Miami.
Now we've got Denver and Las Vegas in Las Vegas. I'll take Las Vegas.
Yeah, Las Vegas is the hot hand right now, and I don't foresee them. I don't foresee them slowing down right now. They do play KC afterwards, so that'll be an interesting game to see if Las Vegas can pull this out, that they can go hot into KC with KC coming off their bye. I think the Raiders are definitely playing for a playoff spot right now, so if they can win this, they're putting themselves in an even better spot at 6-3 if they win.
The Raiders need this game, so I don't think they're going to take it too lightly. And it's in Vegas. If it was an Arrowhead, it changes some things just because the elevation.
Yeah.
But I do think Las Vegas should win. Next matchup, I haven't even picked this one for myself in my pool. Buffalo and Arizona in Arizona.
Give me Buffalo. I almost picked him last week, and I'm not gonna push down Josh Allen again.
Was Buffalo Seattle in Seattle this past week?
No, Buffalo.
Or was it in Buffalo? Okay, I'll make this pick on this podcast, but my pick on my pick'em pool with my buddies might be different because I need to see Josh Allen's home and road splits. That is going to be fundamental in who I pick this week. Because Kyler Murray in Arizona is dangerous. He's proven it. He out-dueled Russell Wilson in a primetime matchup. And if Josh Allen's going to resort to his normal or what his baseline has been for the past 4 weeks, then he's not going to be finishing drives.
Yeah, that's true.
And if Kyler, because Kyler's more dynamic with his feet, his arm's not as strong as Josh's, but I think Kyler's extremely accurate. And it's going to come down to which defense you like more. I think I like the Cardinals defense more than the Bills defense. Marginally.
Yeah, I don't know. It's both two really good young quarterbacks against kind of mediocre defenses.
I will side with Buffalo. That was a big win against the Seahawks, and the Cardinals couldn't beat the Dolphins. So the Cardinals need this game more than Buffalo does, which I think might add to the game, but I think Buffalo has a shot to win. So I'll go Buffalo with you.
Okay.
And then going down the board, we have Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. Joe Burrow could shock the world again and beat a team. But Pittsburgh, they would have to play down to the competition for 4 straight quarters, and I don't see it happening. Unless Big Ben is out due to COVID.
Yeah, if Big Ben is out, I don't think Mason Rudolph could beat the Bengals. So I will pick the Bengals if Ben is out. If Ben is in, give me the Steelers.
Yeah, if Ben is out, Cincinnati, I'll take Steelers either way.
Okay.
So I think they could scheme up an offense for 1 week to beat that defense, because that defense isn't good. And I think Joe Burrow will make – like, Joe Burrow struggled against the Ravens defense. He's going to struggle against the Pittsburgh defense. There's no doubt in my mind. So it's going to come down to which team can make more mistakes, if it's going to be a quarterback besides Ben. But if Ben's playing, I think they win by at least 10. Next matchup, we have San Francisco going to New Orleans.
Is this even fair?
San Francisco could win. The Patriots are really bad. Whenever they played the Niners, I thought the Patriots weren't that terrible. But give me New Orleans. I've been riding New Orleans for a while. I think the Saints should win.
Yeah, give me New Orleans too. I'm even trying to get New Orleans defense for this week.
Mm-hmm. I think the next matchup, you've got Seattle and the Rams in L.A.
Russ is pissed. Give me Seattle.
I think this one might actually burn us, but I'm going to go Seattle as well. It's just Russ is cooking and Jared Goff. If he's 2018 Jared Goff, the Rams can win this game. But their running backs are hurt. Goff needs to find the end zone more. And their defense isn't a world beater. They have Aaron Donald, but Russ plays Aaron Donald twice a year for the past 5 years. So he knows how to deal with Donald. I don't think he's going to make as many mistakes. It should be a bounce back game for the Seahawks. And they can't afford to give up ground in the NFC West.
Honestly, it needs to be a bounce back game for their defense. That's where it's going to lie. If he can just get Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, whoever he wants to just run all over, then it's going to be the Rams all the way. But
yeah,
if I don't know
if Seattle's D can be like passable for three quarters, I think this game could have a over under of 65.
Yeah.
This could be a 65-point total scoring game. So I think if Seattle gets past 30 points, I think it's tough for the Rams to beat them.
Yeah.
And then we've got Baltimore, New England. In New England, give me Baltimore.
Yeah, give me Baltimore. There's not really much to say about this. It's just
Stephon Gilmore's out. Lamar Jackson is still Lamar Jackson. He's just not running as much. But this shouldn't be a game that should be having people question stuff.
Yeah.
Then Monday Night Football. The Minnesota Vikings travel to Chicago.
I think we both refuse to pick Chicago. Just Minnesota's a hot hand right now. It's literally the tale of two teams. Minnesota's on a hot streak of running all over people for two straight games, and Chicago's probably going to lose its fourth straight.
It's gonna come down to which quarterback makes less mistakes, and they're both overpaid. So
yeah.
Can Kirkland Cousins beat BD Nick Foles? We will have to find out. David Montgomery might be out for this matchup. So if Dalvin Cook can hit 100 yards and two scores, there's no way the Bears win this game. But if that front seven holds Dalvin Cook to one score and like 80 yards, I think it's close.
Yeah, we'll see. Hand the ball off to Dalvin Cook. It is where it's going to be. It's pretty much how I think it kind of has to go at this point.
I hear you on that.
So that's the last game, right?
Yep, that's the last of the pick'ems for week 9 or week 10 technically.
All right. If you hate our pick'ems, be sure to follow our Twitter and let us know, TMSM podcast, and it's the same on Instagram as well. Tell us why we're wrong, why we're right, why you hate us, why you love us. No, I don't really care. Tell us whatever you want. So with that, that will conclude football and fantasy for the week. If you have any questions as well, always feel free to jump at us on Twitter and Instagram. So let's jump into baseball. Baseball is pretty busy after the World Series is over. We got awards going on. We got free agency, managers. We got all the gold gloves out last week. We won't go through every single gold glove. Alex Gordon and Nolan Arenado won the platinum gloves for their respective leagues. Not surprised at all, Nolan Arenado wins platinum glove. That man will literally is a vacuum at third base and almost shortstop, it feels like, that nothing gets through. And Alex Gordon is just a really good outfielder. He's a fast guy. He's done it for a long time. He knows what he's doing. Shout out to my boy Joey Gallo for getting his first Gold Glove. That man's the future of the Texas Rangers unless he gets traded.
Oh, man. You guys need him to be the future.
I will literally throw this microphone out my window if Joey Gallo gets traded. I will cry. Joey Gallo was the first jersey I bought because for a long time I didn't want to spend like $1.50 on jerseys. And I was finally, you know, I was like, you know what? Give me Gallo. Give me the franchise guy. So if Joey goes, I'm going to burn that jersey. I'm going to burn the house down.
Wow. Aren't you renting right now?
Don't remind me. Make it look like an accident. So let's start with Justin Turner. We talked about Justin Turner last week. Turner, in the middle of the Game 6 of the World Series, was pulled for his corona positive test, came back out, celebrated with his team. I think you and I were both a bit iffy on it, but in the end, if Rob Manfred's not going to suspend anybody for cheating, he's not going to suspend anybody for spreading a virus. And that was the exact case.
Justin Turner could have walked up to Rob Manfred and open hand smacked him back and forth across the face for 5 minutes. And he would have put out a press release and said, Justin Turner understands the severity of his actions and he has publicly apologized. So there will be no further action by the MLB. What the fuck?
I'm telling you, Rob Manfred, if there is two people on this planet who I'm surprised haven't won any of the three Fuck Dustin May awards yet, it's Rob Manfred and Adam Gase. Somehow they have dodged it again, but soon enough, one of them's going to win it. They have to. They just have to. To be fair, Adam Gase is in the top three every week.
He is in the top three every single week. It's bad.
Free agency is beginning. We got some big names on the board. We won't go into speculation right now. We could speculate for hours on who's going to go where. Trevor Bauer said he'll go anywhere. Got Marcus Stroman, DJ LeMahieu. We got Francisco Lindor might get traded. There's a lot going on right now, but it's November. Not a whole lot goes on in November normally for baseball free agency. It's usually around December time where all this stuff happens. So we'll give it some time, see where everyone goes. I think the biggest thing right now for me is that the Oakland A's continue their trend of not wanting to pay their players. Rumor is they're going to let Marcus Semien walk.
Why pay lot player when pay little player do trick?
I don't get it, man. I don't. Marcus, you worked on Marcus Semien for a long time. I think they traded for him. I don't remember how they acquired him for the White Sox, but they did. Everyone knew he could hit, but he couldn't play defense to save his life. Lo and behold, Ron Washington comes in. God bless that man for taking the Texas Rangers to AL championships. But he's a great infield coach. One of the best that I've seen in my lifetime. And he did great in getting Marcus to play better defense and become a top three player. Finished third in MVP voting last year in 2019, I should say. And it's crazy that the A's are going to let him walk. You're just going to look for a replacement like that? And what's crazy is you would be like, okay, if they let Marcus walk, then they're going to pay Chapman and Olsen at some point. It's like, that may not even be true.
It's not a guarantee at all. And that's the scary part about the A's. If history is anything to judge the future upon, the A's are just going to be bringing up guys, turning them into stars, and letting them walk. And you can't win World Series doing that. You have to have top-end talent in this league to be able to push and try to win a World Series.
Yeah, 100%.
This sucks over. The Rays have really good talent, but the Dodgers have the best talent in the league, damn near. And when push comes to shove, talent wins out.
Yeah, you have a big market. A lot of people like to play in LA. You have the talent. That's how you do it. That's how the Dodgers were there for four straight years. And that's how they won a division title 8 straight years.
And they're probably going to be in the title conversation for the next 4 years if they play their cards right.
At least, yeah. I think honestly, the Dodgers just have to address pitching at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If at some point Clayton's going to fall off, I don't know when that is. But Clayton's going to become too old. His back's not going to let him do what he wants to do. Dustin May has a lot to work on. Fuck Dustin May, by the way.
But the thing with the Dodgers, they have Walker Buehler moving forward, and he's one of the biggest chips in the pitching game in the NL right now.
Really,
if they can keep him on board, they just have to find a two, a three, or a four guy to just sit behind him and have them be competent. Yeah. If they can get a second ace, it's over.
Yeah.
You have top billing guys.
And right now their division is just not good. The Giants are rebuilding. Arizona is kind of
buying in, but they should really be selling.
Yeah, San Diego's really like their only quote-unquote threat, but I don't even think San Diego in 162 games could win the NL West from the Dodgers.
Yeah, it's really tricky with the Padres. They went all in almost in this offseason, and they still have a lot of assets in their farm system to play with. So they might be a couple moves away from being a move away. But if anyone's going to push the Dodgers, it will be the Padres. But I don't think I just think they're too young at this point.
I think they were very smart in some of the moves they made. They trade for a lot of guys who still had control. So Mike Clevinger is probably going to be their ace going forward.
Mm-hmm.
He's under control. You have Delson Lamet. You have I think Mackenzie Gore is a top five in the league in prospects. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he could be insane. They have the talent there. They just got to develop it a little bit more. If they can get 2019 Kirby Yates back, that'd be great for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Padres are in a good spot to probably make a wild card spot.
And that's not even bringing up the fact that their supposed ace for the year, Chris Paddock, had a down year. If Paddock can turn it back around, he could be a solid number two behind Clevinger.
Yeah, 100%.
And then they have a rookie of the year candidate in Jake Cronenworth.
Yeah, Cronenworth played really well.
At second base.
I think they just go out and get a first baseman because they let Moreland walk.
What about Hosmer? Is he still there?
Oh, yeah. Why did I forget about Hosmer?
That Padres infield is pretty good. It's not the best in the league, but it's top. I'd say it's top half.
I think I forget about Hosmer because of the 2020 DH, but it looks like 2021 is going to forego the universal DH, but
that's boring.
Yeah, I just a topic for a different day, but
yeah,
just not. I don't think pitchers hitting is good TV. I don't like if someone's on base, he's bunting. If he's swinging, you know, most NL pitchers are going to put up, you know, a halfway decent at bat because they've been there long enough. But
yeah,
when the AL shows up and you're just like, all right, 1, 2, 3. All right, I'm going to go sit back down now.
If the MLB wanted to address ratings and figure out how to actually bring the game forward, you can't move back from the universal DH.
Yeah. So we'll jump into something we called last week. Alex Cora is back with the Red Sox, and I mean they were god awful this year. They were terrible. They had a decent amount of guys opt out. They lost two of their pitchers, three if you count trading David Price.
Mm-hmm.
It's just funny to me that, you know, Alex Cora is going to come back and look around and be like, wait, where are all the guys I had in 18? Where are they at?
Why is Mookie's locker empty? Does anybody want to tell me anything? Am I missing something?
Hey guys, this a prank? Can we put Mookie's stuff back, please?
You know what the craziest thing is? I'm pretty sure Alex Cora still made his money from his contract post-release. So the Red Sox didn't save any money by cutting him. They could have just made an interim manager and kept him on payroll.
Jeez.
They basically, it wouldn't have changed a thing. But I think Alex Cora coming back to the Red Sox is good for the organization. He was really good for them in his stretch there. I don't know how much of it was cheating. We may never know. But I think Alex Cora is what the Red Sox are going to need if they want to get back to where they were.
Yeah.
And so he has some pieces in that franchise right now. He still has Bogarts. He still has J.D. Martinez. And he's got a new toy in Verdugo, and I think that's going to be good. I think the pitching needs to be addressed, but Chris Sale's coming back, and they have a couple of guys coming back from the COVID stuff. So if anyone's going to be able to turn around whatever the hell last season was for the Red Sox, I think it's Cora.
Yeah, I can definitely get behind that. They're in. It'll be interesting because you're literally in the toughest division in baseball. The AL East has young-ass Toronto moving up. Tampa Bay being the best team, the Yankees are always there because they can do whatever they want. And if the Red Sox and the Orioles are young and rebuilding, that, man, it would not surprise me if at maybe not next year, maybe not even 2022, but within the next 3 years, whether it be 21, 22, or 23, all five of those teams could finish over 500 or damn near close.
100%. The talent in that division is unparalleled. The amount of quality players in each of those organizations is insane.
Yeah. So let's jump into, speaking of a little cheating back there, we're going to hand out the Fuck Dustin May Award of the Week. So quick recap of what the Fuck Dustin May Award is if you're new to the podcast or I didn't explain it last week. So Dustin May is a Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher where there's nothing wrong with the man. Well, there is. It's his face.
And his hair.
He has the face and hair that I want to fight him. It's not his fault. He was born that way. I guess his facial hair is his fault. He could shave it off, but he chooses not to. I think it just makes him more douchey. But I just feel like anything that goes wrong, I can just blame Dustin May. I can just guarantee you that he was there doing something and had something to do with it. So this week's award is going to go to Jeff Luhnow. Jeff Luhnow is the former general manager of the Houston Astros. He was there during the cheating scandal. And this man has the audacity. He is going to take the Houston Astros to court for $22 million, claiming that he was, what's the word I'm looking for? Wrongfully terminated. Because he had no idea they were cheating. What?
Well, the biggest thing with that whole suit is if you weren't fired for the cheating, you were fired for being negligent. You were getting fired regardless.
Yeah, there's no way around it.
Like, even if you didn't know about the cheating, it is your job to know what's going on with your franchise. So if there was cheating, how did you not know about it? Boom, there's the door.
Yeah, it just I don't know what judge is gonna sit there and be like, oh yeah, you are gonna win this case. Like, you were wrongfully terminated. Like, dude, no, you run baseball operations. There's nothing you could say that'll be like, oh yeah, you didn't know. There's no way for 162 games, and then however many more postseason games they played, not once did you know that they were cheating.
And it's even crazier to me because like. In the NCAA, Rick Pitino was like blackballed after the whole scandal that involved his program, and he was held to that standard, and that's what you are held to in sports, whether it be amateur or professional. If you are the head honcho guy and there's wrongdoing happening, whether it's through your constituents or whoever works under you, it is your responsibility to be sure of what's going on.
Yeah, so Jeff Luhnow, stop. Stop it. You knew you were cheating. You're wearing the ring. I guarantee you have the ring somewhere, whether it's in your dress or it's on your finger. You are wearing that ring. You are proud of that World Series, and you can't tell me that you didn't know that you cheated to win that thing. It's not possible, dude. Get out. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of it. So with the awards being announced throughout the week, we have a couple more awards. Rookie of the Year went to Devin Williams, reliever for the Milwaukee Brewers. I believe it was one earned run in 27 innings, 57 strikeouts in 27 innings, some ridiculous number. Opponents batted .33 against his changeup. The dude was nasty. It was very unfortunate that the Brewers were without him against the Dodgers. I don't think it changes anything. The Brewers offense was very poor against the Dodgers, but congratulations to Devin Williams. That dude was insane out of the bullpen. Mm-hmm. And I think he's I think he's that future closer. If Hader continues to be in trade talks, I think they can definitely trade Hader and just put Devin Williams in that closer role.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And then for Seattle, outfielder Kyle Lewis. Kyle Lewis, easily, I was not surprised by this at all. He played very well, very good defensively, very good hitter. I think he had like an 8 or 9 game hitting streak at one point. Hit a decent amount of bombs, if I remember right. Definitely a bright spot for a bad Seattle team. Hopefully it's the start of something for them. First rookie of the year for the Mariners since 2001. And could you tell me the 2001 rookie that year?
Ichiro Suzuki. He was also the MVP that year, correct?
I think so. That man was a different breed of baseball player, I'll tell you what.
That Seattle team was a different breed of baseball team until they ran into the Yankees.
Oh, my God, dude. 116 wins, and you get knocked out in the championship series. Was it even the championship series? No, I think they beat Cleveland in the division series. But you set expectations. Oh, dude, it's just, you're the best regular season team ever. That's it. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
You're the Warriors. You were the Warriors before the Warriors.
Exactly. It's indefensible.
Yeah, big time. So we'll jump into the last three awards, last six if you want to look at it that way. We'll throw our predictions in. Manager of the Year gets announced tonight. I think MVP and Cy Young is tomorrow, if I remember right. So we'll jump into AL Manager of the Year, where there's Kevin Cash, Rick Renteria, who has now been fired by the White Sox.
Unceremoniously unemployed.
And, you know, they hired Tony La Russa, who got charged with a DUI. So White Sox having a good time right now.
That's the boy, Tony La Russa.
And then there's Charlie Montoyo of the Toronto Blue Jays. I think Kevin Cash is the easy pick. I want to say it's Charlie Montoyo because he led a young team to the playoffs in this weird year.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing baseball writers, it's probably going to be Kevin Cash.
Mm-hmm.
You just have the best team in the AL against two managers who took young teams to the playoffs.
Yeah.
So go ahead and give me Cash for that one.
I can agree with you on that one. I think Kevin Cash is the pick, and if he doesn't get it, I would be surprised. I think I would take Renteria maybe if he didn't get fired, but I just don't see anybody besides Cash in the AL getting that award. He took his team the farthest. He had the best record in the AL, and it's not like he had the best top end talent. It's not like he was coaching the Dodgers,
right? So we'll jump into NL Manager of the Year. We got Don Mattingly of the Miami Marlins, Jace Tingler of the San Diego Padres, and David Ross of the Chicago Cubs. I think David Ross is the weakest out of all these three. I think he's just there because he's a first-year manager. The Cubs are already good. The Cubs made the playoffs. They won their division. Mm-hmm. I think Jace Tingler did pretty well with San Diego. He was given some talent, but I think Jace Tingler, for what it's worth, did really well. But I think Don Mattingly should run away with this award after the 20 somewhat COVID tests he had through Miami and had to basically roster 70 different dudes or some ridiculous number that they threw out there. I think leading Miami to the playoffs, having that young bullpen, having just a young team in general. I don't even know who the oldest player on their team is anymore. But I definitely think Mattingly should walk away with this one.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if Mattingly didn't get the award. He's the most deserving, without a doubt.
Yeah. So we'll jump into MVP, which I think gets announced tomorrow. For the AL, you got Jose Abreu of the Chicago White Sox, DJ LeMahieu of the New York Yankees, now free agent, and Jose Ramirez of the Cleveland Indians. I'm going to go with Abreu. I think 60 RBIs in 60 games is a nutty stat.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me. Like, I get it. They were a powerhouse team, but to average an RBI a game if he was, I don't think it happens in a 162 season, but just to average an RBI a game is pretty insane to me. DJ LeMahieu is a great hitter. But you almost want to say being on the Yankees helps him a bit because you always see, you know, the Yankees are the big market team, but I think being on the Yankees could also hurt him because of that high powered offense. I think he kind of just falls into the wayside. It's good that he's in top three. I think he deserves it.
Yeah, he had a great year. And that's the thing. It's like whenever you're on the same team as these mammoths of players, there's just like a Giancarlo Stanton or an Aaron Judge, you're taking the back seat regardless. But it's nice that his stats were able to like speak for themselves in a sense.
But I think I'll stick with my Abreu pick.
I can agree to that. I didn't pay enough attention to the AL in regards to baseball this year. So I can't really disagree with you on that point.
We'll jump into NL. We got Mookie Betts of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Freddie Freeman of the Atlanta Braves. Manny Machado of the San Diego Padres. Give me Freddie. I think Freddie's super deserving. I think he's sat on a bad Atlanta team for a long time. I think he played very well this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has to be Freddie.
Yeah, I just couldn't see Freddie Freeman not winning it. This is his best chance, and if he doesn't get it this year, I don't think he's going to get one. Like, yeah. Mookie, yes, he's a great player, but Mookie has at least five more years to pile up more hardware, maybe even six. But I think this is Freddie's best opportunity for an MVP, and if he doesn't get it this year, I don't see him getting one. So I want Freddie to win it myself.
Yeah. And the last but not least, we'll go Cy Young. In the AL, you got Shane Bieber of the Cleveland Indians.
That's the award.
Yeah, and two other guys who probably aren't going to win it. Kenta Maeda of the Minnesota Twins and Hyunjin Ryu of the Toronto Blue Jays. Bieber was just out of his mind this year. Yeah, you could say he pitched to down competition for the most part. He pitched against the AL and the NL Central. Mm-hmm. But an ERA under 2, just striking out dudes. I think he had the most strikeouts on non-competitive pitches, and non-competitive pitches is like 15 inches off the plate or some ridiculous number. Like, he's throwing curveballs in the other batter's box and getting people to swing. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I think Shane Bieber is an easy runaway with this.
Yeah, I don't see how Shane Bieber doesn't win this award. It's him, and the field is just too far away.
Yeah, Lance Lynn may have been the closest one to him for a while, but then Lynn fell off pretty fast towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
NL Cy Young, this is a much closer race in my opinion. You got Trevor Bauer, now free agent, former Cincinnati Red, Yu Darvish of the Chicago Cubs, and Jacob DeGrom back there again of the New York Mets.
Mm-hmm.
I love Darvish. I have a special place for Darvish in my heart. He started with Texas, played really well for the most part. He's a strikeout machine. His biggest issue was control. It's not even control. It's the fact that he wants to strike everybody out. So in the end, you're going to walk a lot of dudes. You're going to, you throw so many breaking balls. Eventually you're going to miss a few and hit a couple dudes. And I think that was the biggest problem for a while. But now this year he had like 12 or 13 K per nine. Yeah, the dude just loves striking people out. And he was on one this year. Jacob DeGrom, the basically only thing he doesn't get is wins because he's on the New York Mets. I think I saw some stat. He had like 90 to 100 starts with the Mets, and over half of them, the Mets scored one run or fewer. Some dumb number like that.
Oh.
And then Bauer, also on one, had a great year in to show that he deserves a lot of money. Who knows where he's going to sign and how much for. I guess he has a deal with a buddy that if he signs a multi-year deal that he gets shot with a paintball gun from 10 feet away anywhere. So who knows if that goes into consideration. I mean, imagine signing this dude to a one-year deal and then just trading him. If he has like a good half season, you could probably get a good lot for him.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see where Bauer goes, but I think Bauer's your Cy Young.
I think it's going to be Bauer or it's going to be DeGrom, just because I think DeGrom's narrative fits. He didn't have the best stats, but he's on one of the worst teams in baseball with the Mets. They were terrible this year. They underachieved across the board. But the only bright spot was Jacob deGrom, and this would be his third straight.
Yeah, it would be his third straight. He's just...
And then he gets an opportunity at four straight Cy Youngs the following year. That narrative, I'm not saying it's going to win him the award, but if the stats are super close, I could see them giving it to deGrom for that opportunity.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. They did it for Gold Gloves. I don't know if they're doing it for every award, but apparently they're letting like StatCast and Sabermetrics determine who's winning this year. So it's all these different weird ass stats. Like, don't get me wrong, some of them are good, and then some of them I just like I understand WAR, but my biggest issue with WAR was when Albert Pujols, I think it was 18 or 19, he was batting like 220, 230 maybe.
Yeah.
But he was finishing with like 30 bombs and 100 RBIs, and you want to tell me his WAR's negative? Like,
yeah.
Sorry, man. If this guy's driving in runs and hitting bombs, I don't care what his WAR is. He's doing what I paid him to do. He's not running, I can tell you that. But if he's driving in runs like I pay the man to do, I don't care what his WAR is.
Yeah, I get that.
So it'll be interesting. I think this AL Cy Young is very, very close. I'm not going to be surprised by any of the picks, whether it's Bauer, Darvish, or DeGrom. Any one of those three, I'm just like, yep, makes sense.
Yeah, the NL Cy Young is going to be a coin flip. Whichever way it lands, it's not a bad candidate to win the award. But if the AL Cy Young finishes out and Shane Bieber's not holding the trophy, there will be burning in cities across America. The dude had the best year of anyone, really, in the lockout shortened season. He was absolutely insane.
Yeah, honestly, his only bad game was game one against the Yankees.
Exactly.
So... I don't know. We'll see how the awards go out the next 2 days, and we'll jump back into it next week. We'll evaluate. Free agency is going to be up and down, so we'll see how much baseball news there is over the next couple weeks. Once award season's over, that's pretty much it. We'll see how this Jeffrey Luhnow case goes.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep updates on that. But with one season genuinely ending, we're getting closer to the start of a new one. The NBA, they finalized the restart date for 12/22 of this year, 2020. So that means this will be the shortest turnaround for an NBA season in the history of the league. And that's not even counting for the teams that I believe won a championship. Actually, no, I think it's for the teams that won the title. But it's a rest period of 71 days, which some players are not happy about at all due to the strenuous nature of an NBA season. But also in NBA news, this coming month, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have the draft, free agency, and some other stuff going off. And it's going to be a very busy month. And so as those things draw nearer, we'll be able to cover them more in depth. The free agent class isn't anything that's super eye-opening or awe-inspiring this year. But the NBA draft will be definitely an interesting point in the season, because we're looking at a draft that might not have the top end talent of previous drafts, but it's deeper than we've seen in a long time. And so people that are at the top might actually trade down to try and get a different pick and some other compensation. So I don't think any pick is safe per se for teams. I think Golden State should trade down. I think Minnesota should trade down, but we're going to see where the cards fall and who goes where. And also, that's honestly about it for the NBA. LeBron James is mad about the new season's restart. There's been speculation about Giannis wanting to sign with the Heat. But beyond that, I've heard some stuff about the Clippers, the team not liking Paul George, also not liking Kawhi Leonard for taking games off. Next year's going to be interesting. I don't know what's going to play out. I think the Clippers are going to be a lot worse than they were last year. I think there's going to be a lot of dissension in the locker room. I think there's not going to be a lot of getting along. And it's just going to be interesting to see where everything plays out. Gordon Hayward wants out of Boston, last thing I heard.
Man, there's a lot going on. I mean, I think actually the 71 days is the shortest for any sport. I think hockey was around like the 80-day and 90-day mark back in the striking era in the 90s. But 71 days, like, that's not a lot. You're going to play – they're playing, what, 72 games? I think 70?
Yeah, they're playing a 72 game season along with the playoffs, but I heard they're going to cancel All-Star Weekend because it just makes sense. Only reason All-Star Weekend works is because fans can be there and spend money.
Yeah, honestly. It'll be interesting to see if this is enough for some teams. Like, maybe the teams who were knocked out of the bubble pretty quick have the advantage. We'll see how the Lakers look. See if they look slow coming out of the gates. See if the Heat looks slow coming out of the gates. Anybody for really. It would not surprise me if some teams come slow out of the gates because you're like, man, I really didn't get to spend a whole lot of time with my family.
Realistically, it's a 72-game season, so there's even less margin for error. So if a team like the Kings or the Warriors or even the Hawks jump out with all this extra rest, so like a 15-5 run, that could realistically propel you into the playoffs if all things go right.
Yeah. It should be very interesting. Are there any coaching positions left open? I know Doc Rivers went to Philly, right?
Yeah, Ty Lue is the coach in LA for the Clippers.
That's right.
The Pelicans got Jeff Van Gundy. Steve Nash is with the Nets. I think all the vacancies are filled currently.
Steve Nash with the Nets.
And he also brought in Amari Stoudemire and Mike D'Antoni as his assistants for that team. So it'll be interesting to see.
Houston kicked out Mike D'Antoni.
Yep. I don't know who Houston signed for their coach, to be fair. I'm not entirely sure.
They might be the only vacancy left. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. We saw with baseball, like, some teams came slow out of the gates with, you know, being kicked out of their routine, basically. So it'd be interesting to see that, like, when was the championship won? Like, a little bit.
NBA championship was won like mid to late October.
Yeah, and they're already back to doing basketball, like, not training camps, but
it might have been early October, actually, like October 10th.
Yeah, but it's interesting to see that
they're already reporting to, like, camp and stuff. They're starting to get their preseason stuff done.
Yeah, you've been home for a week, and you're like, oh well, time to go back to work, I guess.
Yeah, so you might even see some of the star players that were deep in the bubble taking days off or weeks off at a time. I've heard some speculation about LeBron just sitting out the first month of the season and letting Davis carry the load.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
I mean, AD could do it, but it'd be, I don't know, for a 72-game season to take, what, probably like 20-something games off? Maybe a little less than 20?
Yeah. It would definitely be interesting to see how it all played out. That's about it for NBA news.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot going. Yeah, there's not a whole lot going on in the NHL right now. The NHL, there's been a lot of, like, I know the Sharks made a trade for a goalie. A lot of goalies have been jumping to places. So if your team signed a goalie, I would say just look it up. I don't have, like, a list of the 97 goalies that got signed a little bit after the Stanley Cup got one. I think they're shooting for a January 1st startup, which would be about 3.5 months, a little less than 3.5 months of downtime. So they're around the 90 day mark.
Yeah.
Probably like 95, 96 days of downtime. I think the title was won like late September, maybe in the September 20s. If I remember right. So it'll be interesting to see, because that, I mean, it's a tough ass sport. I would not doubt you get tired really fast. It's another one of those things. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if some teams, even like the Lightning, who won the championship, come out slow. Mm-hmm. It'll be very interesting to watch these two sports start very close together. I mean, they usually do start close together, right? Basketball and hockey. They usually start and end around the same time.
Yeah, give or take.
Yeah, basketball ends around June, right? I think so. I remember right? Usually it's the summer of championships.
Yeah.
Hockey usually ends around before summer because, you know, heat and ice don't mix. So it makes
Not at
sense.
All.
Just imagine going to a hockey game just to cool off. Be like, yeah, I'm going to get first row seats to the Sharks game. I need to sit as close to the rink as possible.
It'd be like SeaWorld. Everyone, instead of skates, they have like mini jet skis on their feet.
That'd be so
water hockey.
Oh my god. Can I need to call NHL commissioner right now. Hold on.
Start a summer league.
I just made you a lot of money, sir.
And just have like one of those little rubber balls as the puck, like the ones you would use for like field hockey and like middle school.
Oh my God.
But instead of getting penalty box time for high sticking somebody, you just got sent to the office.
Yeah. Can you go talk to the principal, please? They get dunked for 10 seconds. 10 second dunking.
Exactly.
Imagine just a bunch of dudes driving around jet skis. Just slapping their sticks everywhere. Running into each other. Like, hang on, we gotta stop the game at jet ski right now, I guess. You just have like dudes jumping on and off the jet skis. Hell, you
even
don't
better.
You don't even need that many players.
Turn them into water propelled shoes. Like your or like water skis, but like with like a engine on each.
Oh, get those jet packs.
Oh, that'd be crazy.
Oh my God. It turns into like lacrosse at that point. You can't even have the ball on the water anymore.
Yeah. Underwater hockey, you're just playing at the bottom of the ocean.
Giant scuba suits. Ball is just moving at a minuscule a second.
Whenever you're playing, whenever a fight breaks out, instead of taking their jersey off, you end up ripping off their like oxygen tank. It's a fight to the death.
There's no
penalty box time. It's just victory.
Who drowns first?
Yeah. This is starting to devolve.
Yeah, we're getting a little dangerous. I think that's what we'll end the podcast for the day before we start getting the FBI called on us. So
definitely.
Thanks for listening. As always, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, hit us with that criticism, the feedback. Love to hear from you guys on how we can do better, how we could do worse. Actually, no, don't tell us how to do worse. I don't want to do any worse. I don't want to do worse than I'm doing now. I already know that there's, you know, a few nicks here and there, but we'll clean it up. We'll get there.
It's a process, baby. It's a process.
I mean, we're not a statistic anymore. We got past, this is episode 3, so no longer a statistic.
Oh, yeah.
So thanks for listening, and we will catch you next Tuesday for episode 4.
Episode 4 coming at you live. Well, not live, pre-recorded, but airing on next Tuesday.
All right, take it easy, folks.
Catch you later.